Hello, everyone. This is Tal, the CCW Podcast. Welcome to Episode 6. This is going to be called CCW 201. Basically, my classroom experience at my CCW class. I'm going to be doing this podcast by myself. Basically, this podcast will be about my recollections of the classroom portion of my CCW class. I took it about almost a year ago now, and just had my looking over my notes and just considering some things that I'd like to maybe share with you. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email myself or Dagny at ccwpodcast@gmail.com. So basically, I was just looking at my notes from the CCW class and thought it might be a good idea to kind of give people out there a little bit of an expectation on what they might be able to experience on their own. And for people who are listening, might be a good refresher for those who already have their permits, and for those who are looking forward to it, to doing the class, maybe you might notice some differences. I'm not making any guarantees or warranties on the accuracy of any of these statements, but it's just food for thought, and I'm sure consult your local laws and regulations, of course. But basically, the class started with defining what is CCW, and it's basically the concealed carrying of a firearm, or weapon, actually. The W stands for weapon, but usually CCW is a slang for a crime, or it has been known as such. So carrying a concealed weapon, some police officers, I'm told, hear that term as a crime. We've sort of commonized the term. Is that even a word? We've made the term CCW also mean concealed carry legally as well. So depending on who you say, I think CCW permits are now widely well-known enough to kind of taken over that old school CCW as a crime. But, you know, some police officers might think differently, but basically they started with the definition and then they moved on to, in our state, we can open carry. And that means basically you can open carry without a license, that is. And open carry basically is having a firearm with you but not having it concealed. Typically, you'll see it mostly on a outside the waistband holster, and not being covered by any garment. You know, think of your police officers, your undercover, or excuse me, not undercover, plain clothed police officers, and you'll kind of know what I'm talking about when I say open carry. They're kind of obvious with being armed, and you usually aren't. You know, at least I'm not overly surprised seeing someone in plain clothes with a firearm if they kind of behave like they should be having it, if that makes any sense. But that was just another rule. I'm not sure about your particular state, but in my state, open carrying is legal. But our instructors recommended not to carry, and I think they believe, or not to openly carry, that is, and I think their school of thought was that if you do open carry, the bad guys know the first guy they go after, you know. And the other side of the coin I can see is open carry acts as sort of a deterrent, meaning if there is a bad guy in the area and they're looking to start trouble, maybe they find another place or an easier target when they see their potential victim or someone within the potential victim's vicinity has an openly displayed firearm. But all in all, I think I agree with not recommending open carry because, as you know, I'm very, very secretive and private about whether or not I carry, and that's definitely your own business, so to speak. You know, as long as you're not breaking any laws, it's nobody's business. Whether or not you're carrying, And that's the best part of the concealed carry. And they went over the time period about how long you can expect to get your particular permit. This particular class in our particular jurisdiction said it would be about 2 to 3 months before I got my permit. And I was very, very lucky in that it took me about one month to get it. And I was ecstatic. Came on a Friday, I remember. And I didn't even expect it so soon. I even marked a date on the calendar 3 months after I'd submitted everything, and hoped that it would come by that date, and had that date in mind 3 months down the road. And just 1 month into that 3 month period, I got it on a Friday, and it just was an awesome feeling, you know. It was, I think, one of the best, you know, I don't know. It was a really cool moment. I don't want to overstate it or understate it, but it was a very cool moment. And I got almost a little nervous after having it, and says, oh my, now I have to really actually go through with this and carry. But, well, let's go back to this. And some other statistics they kind of quoted was that 95% of encounters, shooting encounters, happen within arm's length. And if you really think about that, that's pretty incredible, because most of the places that I've been shooting at least 7 yards, and so 7 yards distance is about 21 feet, and you can cover 21 feet, it's been known that you can cover that 21 feet in about a second and a half. You think it's a pretty far distance, 21 feet from you and someone else, but really, they can cover that distance in 1.5 seconds, and that's pretty incredible, you know. This, particularly if that person has a knife or some other close quarter type of weapon, and I think it's kind of agreed that 7 yards is the distance that you can really engage someone as a CCW holder. That distance, unless of course they're already armed themselves with a handgun, but the 95% statistic is kind of interesting, because many people I know shoot from, or at least from the readings that I have, they shoot from 15 yards, 25 yards, 50 yards, 100 yards with their handguns. And I'm sort of the proponent that in realistic situations, you know, absent S hitting the fan type scenarios, you probably are going to be engaging in someone, if, God forbid, you ever in a situation like this, with someone very close to you, you know, in terms of distance, maybe even arm's length, you know, it sounds like it from these statistics. So that was kind of an interesting stat, and I, you know, take statistics with a grain of salt, of course, you know, but another thing they mentioned was there's no right to protect property. Meaning that you can't shoot someone if they're robbing your, or if they're trying to steal your car, for instance, you know, your prized baseball card collection, while invaluable to you, perhaps, and maybe worth giving your life for, in your own mind, the eyes of the law won't treat you too kindly over defending that piece of property with deadly force. So that seems to me to be pretty much common sense. And they also talked about this ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. And basically, the ability is the means to deliver deadly force. Does that person who's coming to attack you have the ability to deliver deadly force? Now, what's the ability really mean? Well, does the person or persons outnumber you? That could be a factor. Are they armed? That could be a factor. Are they bigger than you? You know, women have if they're confronted with a larger man, that's a disparity of size, and that's a factor in whether or not there's been a means to deliver deadly force. If you're a 110-pound woman facing a 250-pound attacker, I think the case could be made that, you know, there's a disparity of force there, and the 250-pound man can deliver deadly force to that woman. And also there's age discrepancies, an older senior citizen against a young athletic person that might be viewed as a situation of ability. And there's also opportunity, which is a situation in which such a person could use deadly force. And I think that's, did the person have the chance to do it? It's one thing to say, you know, if someone has a knife and is a mile away and saying, hey, you know, I'm gonna kill you, that might be, the person does have the ability perhaps, but not the opportunity, because he's still, as of that, a mile away. Obviously, he could be given the opportunity if he got very close. And the final one is jeopardy, which is a reasonable belief that imminent danger of receiving deadly force from this subject. And basically, that means that, you know, a reasonable person would believe that, hey, this person who's coming after me is gonna do it right now, and I gotta do something or else I'm in trouble, you know. And in trouble meaning I could die, you know. So those three factors, ability, opportunity, and jeopardy, I think are pretty well known amongst the CCW instructor crowd and those learning, like I am, about certain factors to consider. Obviously, I don't know the value of this necessarily. If you're ever in a situation, God forbid, that you have to find yourself deciding whether or not you draw your weapon, whether or not you're actually going to be able to say, okay, A, is there an ability? B, is there opportunity? C, is there jeopardy? I mean, are you going to run through that equation? I don't know, but maybe knowing it beforehand will kind of get you to know what to look for if you're ever in that situation. It seems to me like you'll be making 1,000 or 1,000,000 calculations all at once in your mind when something like that would ever happen. So it's good to know these things, I guess. From a contextual standpoint, you know, gives you a little bit of an idea of what to think about if and when. Now, whether or not you'll actually be thinking is another question entirely, right? But we do what we can, right? So, another thing that I thought was interesting was that, you know, people say there's fight or flight responses. You know, you'll either fight or you'll run away. And one of the insightful things about the class was I learned that there's more than just fight or flight. There's actually three other things you could do. You know, there's fight. You stand and defend yourself. There's flight. You run away to fight another day, which is not always the wrong decision at all. Oftentimes it's the best decision. There's freeze, which many people will say if you don't have a plan or haven't trained for such scenarios, that you'll just freeze and be stopped, you know, frozen in your tracks. Someone comes and pulls a knife on you, you don't run, you don't fight, you just stand there, immobilized. And that's an interesting thing. There's also posture, which basically means you kind of make yourself look bigger than you appear. You know, you may have seen these Discovery Channel documentaries where animals kind of blow themselves up, whether it be for mating purposes or for fighting purposes, but they do kind of make themselves bigger. I know our cats, well, sometimes from time to time, will, if they ever feel threatened, will kind of hop on their side and just kind of bounce on their sides. And the reason for that is they want to show you the length of themselves and have that face you to kind of show them, hey, you know, I might be narrow from the front, but look at how wide I am from the side. And that's kind of how they posture. And the fifth category is sometimes people just give up. They give up and they submit. And obviously, of these five, that's I think by far the worst, you know. Whatever you do, I think don't never. Well, I mean, it's up to you, I guess, but I don't think you ever gotta, you don't ever have to submit, you know. There's always another way, you know. And so, obviously, everyone knows what submit is. You kind of just give yourself to the aggressor and just lay down, I guess, so to speak. I would never recommend that, of course. But it's an option, and it's a response that to such stimulus that people do fall into. Just be aware of that. There's not just fight or flight. There's three others. There's probably a lot more, too. I don't know. But let's see what else there is to talk about here. I think that's pretty much it. I mean, the class was really good. And I don't want to say everything that the class said, because obviously, you know, the value is in actually going to the class and actually hearing it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. It was an invaluable experience, and I think I would have taken it anyways, even if I didn't have to do so to get my permit. It was very informative, and if and when my wife actually takes the class, I think I'll be able to join her and attend the class again myself, kind of as a refresher course. I've been in communications with them, and they've been gracious enough to let me attend, and so I think I'll do that and maybe pick up some new kernels of information, and wouldn't hurt to get back out into the range and start firing some shots downrange as well. So it would be a good thing. I think, you know, Dagny gets a little nervous about being able to contribute to these podcasts, and I kind of try to reassure her that no matter what, you know, even if she's not familiar with the issues that I want to talk about, that sometimes people like to hear just the natural banter rather than one person talking. I know in my podcast, my favorite podcasts are always ones with multiple people, you know, or interviews. So one man talking for 20 minutes is not necessarily my idea of a great time, but, you know, that being said, that's when I'm doing this particular podcast. So I guess one last thing I'd want to talk about is that our state has a pretty cool act, and it's a law basically that says there's no duty to retreat, and this is out in the public, you know, this is out in the streets, as it were, you know. In your home, there's sort of that castle doctrine. I don't know if you know about that. But in your home, you know, check with your state's laws. But generally, you have a right to defend your turf, you know, and it's pretty much the oldest law in the land, the ability to defend your home and the people in it from outside invaders, I guess. But out in the streets, you know, some states require you to retreat, meaning that if you ever get into an encounter that is sort of life or death, there might be a duty to retreat if you can. Now, my state, thankfully, we have one of the better laws about this. That is, there's no duty to retreat. You know, if you're not committing a crime, you have a right to be where you're at legally. You know, say you're in a coffee shop, you don't, you know, you have a legal right to be there. You have a coffee in your hand or something. And basically, you have an honest and reasonable belief that deadly force is necessary. Basically, you go back to the ability, opportunity, jeopardy equation again and kind of run that through. But whether or not you have that opportunity to do what you need to, it's, I think, really, really progressive. You know, it's really good, I think. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but it's really reassuring, I guess. I don't know. It's one time that I think a statute is actually a good thing, you know. And along with that is that there's a provision that provides for immunity from civil liability. So basically, if you're found not guilty of any crime, that no one can sue you for money. And that's pretty interesting. I think that's a realization that even if you win, quote unquote, win in the criminal courts, sometimes the families can get you for everything you have financially, or whatever's left after you've had to defend yourself in criminal. But I think that's it for today. Thank you for listening, and as always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email me or Dagny at ccwpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.